Bezos Hashem, we are in Chayim Salvavis Shah Bitochen for the end of Perek Gimel. For the end of Perek Gimel. V'yichavim. It's mamish like the last couple of Perek. Sorry? 394 in the English. Yashukayach. Mamish, the last couple of paragraphs. We've been discussing the big subject of Hishtadlus. Along with our bitachon, along with our trust that Hashem is the one who is deciding and setting up our needs on all fronts, along with that, Hashem expects us to make material efforts toward those needs. This is what we call Hishtadlus. So we discussed at length why it's set up that way. We'll briefly restate what we stated last week, the understanding that we go about the Hishtadlus, not as in this is what's going to make or break it, but these are certain cards that Hashem expects me to punch so that he will give me what he intended for me. And therefore, you don't go about it with a desperation. If I don't manage to get it done, I won't have what I need, because Hashem is the Maaseh, the one deciding it. It's about, Hashem says, I expect you to a certain level of cooperation. If that's not possible, then I'll do what I intended anyway. Sometimes I set it up that you can't do that, and therefore you just have to leave it up to me. And also more than that, I'm giving you certain guidelines and limits as to the extent of the efforts you should make. And this is what we saw last week, that a person is not required to do every form of Hishtadlus, whatever form of Hishtadlus is available. If a person has to see what works with his nature, what works with his abilities, a person is not required to go and take a job. Now, I'm going to stress again, we stressed this last week, I'll stress it again until we get there. We're using Parnosa as the model, but as we'll see as we go along, this is relevant to so many other areas in life, including our ruchnias, including health, including relationships. We'll see as we go along. But again, we're using Parnasa as the classic and most easily illustrated example of the whole issue. But again, what we're saying is, you don't have to go about, just feel desperately, whatever Hishtadlus is available, whatever job is available, I must take. No. You're not required to do something that completely clashes with your nature, that completely clashes with your abilities. You should try to find something that you can see yourself doing in a happy way, in a long-term kind of way. And also not something that will clash with your health, not something that will clash with your ruchnias, not something that will clash with your family life. These are broad strokes for going about the Hishtadlus, but with the understanding that Hashem expects me to go about it in a certain way. And also the other big piece of sometimes the lines of our Hishtadlus, very often, the lines of our Hishtadlus are defined by halacha. There are many situations where Hashem will tell you, now, I want you to cut your Hishtadlus short, whether because of davening, because of honesty, because of Shabbos, because of other issues of Bein Adam L'Chaveroi. Here, I want you to cut your Hishtadlus short. And in all these situations is where the test comes. Are you doing your Hishtadlus because Hashem expects it of you? If yes, then those situations where Hashem says, now I'd like you to let go, you should be able to comfortably let go and leave it up to him. If you're going about the Hishtadlus because how else will I live, then you tell Hashem, I'm sorry, I know you'd like me to let go here, but I just have to take care of myself. Obviously, then you can't be claimed to be doing the Hishtadlus as a boiteach. That's the challenge of Hishtadlus. Question.
So it's clear if there's a hard line, like you can't work on Shabbos. But let's say it's an optional mitzvah. There's a simcha, a levaya. You would have to close your store and lose all the business if you did these optional mitzvahs. How do you know what you should do?
See, you're bringing out that there's very, very often gray area here. And that's true. That's why I keep using the term broad strokes. In all the areas we've been discussing, there's a lot of room for gray area. Like, for example, we say, don't take a job that's going to clash with your health. Now, I take my health very seriously. I exercise 3 hours a day. And besides that, I do all kinds of other courses, and the diet that I maintain requires also 3 to 4 hours a day just in terms of preparing the food. So you're telling me to take a job that will work with my health? Fine. I need a job that's from 10:30 to 11:30 in the morning. Other than that, it's going to clash with my health. So gray area, right? Take a job. Take a job that will work with your ruchnius. Ooh, that's a big one. I want it to work with my ruchnius. I want to be learning 13 hours a day. So give me a job that's 20 minutes a day and will provide me with everything I need for the month. It obviously gets great. And like you're saying, you say that sometimes there are issues of halacha that come up. So like you said, there are areas where absolute. Here you know you have to stop. But then there are the situations that are not as clear. A mitzvah comes up. It's going to come at a very great expense to me. So it's true. A lot of this, there's going to be a lot of gray area here. And this is the disappointing part. There's no way of laying down the lines in a clear way. Here, you have to be using a combination of your own good sense, of good guidance, and a dose of bitachon, meaning you committed, one person will be told, hey, just let go, because he really feels comfortable letting go, and he feels like, I can do this comfortably and feel that I'm going to close up my shop for a week in order to show up for a wedding at 5 minutes in Texas, okay? To say mazel tov, and it's a mitzvah, the mechut might even notice me, and therefore, I trust that if I go and make that effort, Hashem will take care of it. So Mamish feels confident like that. Perhaps it's the right thing for him to do. He feels even more confident, then he should already start seeking guidance. But another person might say, that's just not going to make sense for me. And he might also be right. Sometimes it depends on the person's level of his own sense. Sometimes you really need to go seek external guidance, someone who can, not necessarily a Rabbi, sometimes it's an issue, sometimes it's a matter of talking to somebody else, some other conscientious friend who can help you just see things a little bit more from the outside and talk things through with you. Sometimes that itself already gives more clear direction than when you're trying to figure it out yourself. Sometimes, yes, it's an issue of going to consult with a wiser person, which can be weiter, anything from an older relative to a Rav. So, yes, whether we like it or not, there is going to be gray area here, and we don't like it. But there is going to be the gray area. But as I said last week, sometimes the gray area is expanded to, and people just get overwhelmed. There's no way of ever figuring it out. We have broad strokes that give us certain direction. We will run into gray area. We will run into gray area, and those situations you'll have to navigate. Right? Okay. But the concepts, the idea is to understand the principles. Another important point, just to recap from last week, is that part of hishtadlis is persistence. When you're doing hishtadlis, like we said, you have to be ready to tolerate the rough parts of the job. We said, don't take something that's going to clash head on with your personality. Right? If you're a skinny, easily exhaustible kind of guy, and the only job available is mining boulders, so it's not for you, right? But on the other hand, whatever job you are going to take, you have to be ready to embrace that there are going to be hard parts to it. That's part of the business. That's part of the idea. That's part of the expectation. There are going to be hard parts to it. So you're looking for something that, in general, in a long-term kind of way, this works with me in my nature, it works with me in my abilities, and the challenge is be able to weather. Here also, there's going to be gray area, but we're talking broad strokes. That was A, and B, and this was another challenge that he threw at us, was that be ready to handle ups and downs in terms of sometimes, so you decide a certain business makes sense for you, and there will be ups and downs. Don't, you have to have a level of wherewithal. You go through a couple of a rough period, don't say, oh, this isn't working. No, there might be times where Hashem will say, now I'm going to now I'm going to want you to go through a rough month or two to test you. If you can still go about it calmly, if the job still makes sense, if it's still reasonable ishtadlis, and it's just one of those types of things that will sometimes have ups and sometimes have downs, part of the expectation is stick with it. But like you raised last week, sometimes it reaches a person, a situation where a person, that's it. You know, a year's gone by, this month, this business just isn't making money anymore. So of course, here also, there will be gray area, but we do have, this concept should be clear, that it involves wherewithal. It involves wherewithal, it involves a certain sense of persistence. Sometimes you need to try again and again and again before it goes. Okay. Now we move on to the next part of it. This is a very fundamental piece, and again, in rounding out the picture of our concepts of ishtadlus. So when you got your job, it meets all of the criteria we've been discussing, and now you're ready to go about it. So now, you're starting your job. You're going to be putting your mind to it. You're going to be applying yourself to it physically, mentally. You're going to be engaging in it. Your overall mindset has to be, oh boy, I hope this is going to get me my parnas. No, you're doing what you need to do, and Hashem is going to give you what He planned for you. What is your agenda here? La'amoid b'mitzvah sabar. This is so fundamental. Why am I doing this job? Because Hashem wants me to do it. I'm doing it as a mitzvah, not something that I need to do in order to make things work. But Hashem, you want me to do ishtadlus? It's Ratzon Hashem. I am coming to be Mekayim Ratzon Hashem. Shetziva ha'odam li'asek misiva zoyim. Who expects man to be a part of the functioning of the world. Ka'avodas ha'adam v'charishasa uzriyasa. Hashem created an earth, but now He expects man. You want food from that earth? Hashem expects man to plow and to plant, to work the ground. And our attitude is, if this is what Hashem wants, then we're going to do it. Like it says in the Pasuk, Vayikach Hashem Elokim es ha'adam. Hashem took man. Vayanicheu began Eden. He put him into Gan Eden, which is described in the Pasuk quite literally as a Gan, a garden with all kinds of trees and plants, right? Le'avda v'le'shamra, to work it. So it's not just about, well, these are the means that Hashem made available to me in order to earn my living. No, Hashem has an expectation of what He wants to be going on in the world. And I am consciously cooperating with Ratzon Hashem. Then you're turning your ishtadlus into a mitzvah. It's not just a technicality, it's not just a mundane material issue, but Hashem wants a functioning world. I'm going to do my little share in terms of a functioning world. And then your ishtadlus, your 9-to-5 activity in the office is a mitzvah. And also, Hashem, yes, Hashem expects you to put the world to work as something that's going to be sustaining man. You can be using animals for your purposes and for your food. Hashem wants you to build up cities. Hashem wants you to prepare food for yourself. To marry and to raise families. Okay, well, let's put a comma there. So Hashem expects you to get busy. Hashem put you in a world. There are various material needs that you have. They are there, latent in the resources around you, in terms of caring for your shelter, in terms of caring for your food, for your health, for raising families. And Hashem expects you now to, like I said, Rabbi Gamliel used the word, to hustle, get busy, and do what you need to do in order to create a livable world. And the idea behind all this is you will be rewarded for doing these things if your intent is, this is so fundamental, if your intent is, this is Ratzon Hashem, I'm going to cooperate with Ratzon Hashem, then you are achieving by going about that job. Regardless of whether you actually netted the money at the end of the month, regardless of whether the hishtadlus actually worked, you will have achieved the purpose. It was a successful endeavor. The failed business was a successful endeavor. Now you're getting schar for your cooperation with Hashem's world. You're getting schar for your bitachon that this didn't work out well, but this is Hashem's plan for me. And now move on to the next stage of your efforts. Now, I'm going to want to back up and touch a little bit more on the different things that were mentioned here in order to bring out the point more. Now, K'mashu Kosov, like the Pasuk says, Yigia kapecha kisoichel ashrecha v'toivlach. When you eat the fruits of your labor, ashrecha v'toivlach, you're fortunate, you're in a good place. V'amru Chazal, and now he's alluding to what Chazal said about that, ashrecha v'toivlach means ashrecha bo'ilam hazeh, meaning it'll enable you to live comfortably in this world. V'toivlach bo'ilam haba, it'll be good for you in the next world. He's giving, I often thought to myself, a lot of times when the Chavis HaVavis brings in a pasuk in a certain context, you have to take note that he's actually giving a perush on the pasuk. It's often a novel perush. It's often an original, profound perush. I always had this like fantasy of sitting down and actually pulling them all out and putting it together as the perush of the Chavis HaVavis on psukim. Here is a very beautiful example of it, because Chazal tell us, if you enjoy the fruits of your work, you're fortunate in this world and in the next world. What does it mean, fortunate in the next world? So the Chavis HaVavis is giving a peirush. He's saying it's because the effort itself is a mitzvah. The effort itself is an end in and of itself. It's not just a means. It's not just a way of getting to my parnasa. But no, the end, I'm leading up to Hashem. The parnasa, I'm leading up to Hashem. I'm doing this job because Hashem wants me to do this. And there, you're earning schar. You're earning schar by what? By sitting at your computer job. So that's the Tov Lach Lo'olam Haba. V'amru Chazal. Chazal also said, V'chol ma'asecha yu l'shem shamayim. Go about everything you do l'shem shamayim. Meaning, everyone one way or the other is going to be working toward a parnasa in some way, make it a part of your spiritual life. I'm doing it as Ratzon Hashem. Not just as, well, this is the mundane part of my life, and I also have the ruchniyistika parts of my life. We already mentioned last week, and we'll get more into it as we go along, when we get more into the health aspect of it. But the way the Chazon Ish puts this is, he says, it's a beautiful little piece, he says, Hateva, nature, material way the world works, isn't it his definition of nature? That is Hashem's regular desire. Meaning it's not like, you know, nature is a certain Shabbos clock, that's the way the world runs automatically, and Hashem gets involved here and gets involved there. Sometimes he splits a sea, sometimes he puts a stop there, sometimes he tells the sun to turn off, right? No. Nature is Hashem's regular schedule. It's Hashem's regular rotzen. This is what he wants. I think Gamaliel used to stress that also. There is immense value to the natural processes of the world, because this is showing you, Hashem is saying, this is how I set up my system to bring man to his greatness. This is how I want things to work. That's why sometimes Hashem steps in with nisim. But otherwise, we see in the Gemara that when man, quote unquote, so to speak, necessitates nisim, that can be something very dangerous. Even when Hashem cooperates, for a man to bring about nisim, now for us that's not such a big nisim. Hold back, don't make nisim happy. Okay, that we're okay with. But there were people who were able to do it, and it was discouraged. I don't know what the rules were. Sometimes they did it, sometimes they didn't. But there was certainly a set of rules. I don't know what those rules are, but there was a set of rules. And doing nisim when it wasn't warranted was actually considered a sacrilege. It was considered wrong, and it was considered dangerous. Because Hashem says, well, I want to do this, and you're so to speak, making me do something else. You're clashing with my rotzen. That's a chutzpah.
Are you allowed to pray for a
nes? What's that?
Are you allowed to pray for a
nes? Davening for a nes. So let's break it down to two parts. This is a good question. We're talking about how nisim are discouraged. Trying to make nisim happen is discouraged. What about davening for a nes? So let's break it down to two parts. The Gemara tells us that davening for something that is completely unnatural, meaning now it's daytime. You say, this is a table. I'd like it to be a chair. And I'm going to put in a heartfelt feel that this should really be a chair. Don't daven for those types of things. But a nes that is not against nature, meaning it's not turning nature upside down, then yes, daven for whatever you want. Daven for whatever you want. And in fact, there's a marsha that implies that a nes that comes about through a tefillah is not called a nes. That's natural. Tefillah does things. That's part of nature. Right? That's part of nature. So in a general way, we'll say daven for whatever you want. If your mom is talking about, I'll give you an example, right? This actually, the Gemara kind of gives this example. I'm going to put it in a little bit of a funnier way, but this is kind of the example of the Gemara. I'll give the example of the Gemara. A woman is pregnant, and she davens for the gender of the baby to change at the stage when it's already there. At the stage when it's already there, she's told the end of her pregnancy. I don't know exactly how it works. And she davens, if it's a boy, I'd like it to be a girl. If it's a girl, I'd like it to be a boy. I always say, don't daven for that. It's already there. Or, like, if something's already happening and you say, I want it to be something else, right? One example, this kind of also illustrates the point. It says when a person is coming in, say a person has the old-fashioned treasure house, not a bank account, okay? Has all his dollars and a mess all over the floor, spread all over the floor. And he makes some money, throws it into that room and locks the door, and he's going to go in and count it all at the end of the year. So the Gemara tells us, before you go in, you can say, Hashem, let the count come out good. But once you count and you say, Hashem, it's not enough, please make it be more. No, don't daven for that, because it is what it is. In those types of things, we would say, daven for an S and accept at the same time. Meaning, you tell Hashem, if this is what you want, I'm accepting it. But I am davening for it to change. I'm davening for it to change. Yeah. As long as there could be some natural way to it. Yes, there could be things. It's not so unusual that there's some, it's discovered that a person can go through a certain surgery to change things. Okay. But coming back to our point, the idea is that Hashem, but Victor Miller put it, he loves Teva. He wants Teva. He wants us to deal with Teva. And that is, Teva is, let's understand, it's a system that is perfectly attuned to how Hashem wants us to serve Him. Teva holds all the challenges we are meant to encounter. There's never a b'dieved. It's never like, oh wow, if this circumstance wouldn't be in place, if I wouldn't have to sleep for 7 hours a night, I'd be able to do this properly. So, you know, there's Ratzon Hashem, but nature conflicts with it. And no. Hashem says, I want to see what you can achieve with needing to sleep 7 hours a day. If you didn't need to sleep 7 hours a day, it's almost like, probably most people here don't sleep 7 hours a day. I must confess to having a hard time. It's a she'ifa that I have. But whatever the case is, whatever number we'll put it at, the person says, if I could just skip sleeping. Somebody once told me a certain natural health authority once told me that a certain Rebbe asked him if he can give him something that will enable him to go without sleep for days on end. So this doctor said, only thing I can suggest is black coffee. Whatever the case is, the idea is that Hashem is saying, no, If you could do it without sleeping, that's mamish not the system I intended. It's not that's malachim. Malachim don't serve my purpose. I want people to achieve. And nature is the perfect system that's set up. It provides us with the exactly right dose of difficulty and challenge to make our avodah worthwhile, to make our avodah truly meaningful. How much of that? Each person has his completely individual game plan. But it's all through nature. It's through nature that Hashem, the way the Rambam puts it is, Hashem weaves his personal hashgacha into nature. If you find yourself coming up against certain challenges or enjoying certain successes, this is Hashem setting up your very personal program in his system and using nature to manipulate it. So cooperating with nature, coming back to the Chazon Ish, is called to cooperate with Ratzon Hashem. And that's where we bring in that famous gematria, which actually was stated by Choshev authorities that Teva is begematria. Well, Kim, there's some knetch there. Don't, if you add it up, you might find that it's off by five and it has to be adjusted. But Teva, either it's hat, maybe it's hat Teva is begematria Elikim. I can't do the math right now. Hat Teva is begematria Elikim. I think that's what it is. But again, I'm not putting a guarantee until I can sit down and work it out. Okay. It's Hateva. Oh, okay. Hateva. Shkoyach. Hateva is begematria Elikim. With the depth behind it being exactly what we're discussing. You know what? I'll add a beautiful twist to this that I heard from Yitzchak Berkowitz. Every so often, when you take a breath, think to yourself, Hashem wants me to live. There are some parts of caring for our health that we do. You have to do it, right? The breathing is built in, happens by itself. But you know what? Every so often, you stop and say to yourself, well, Hashem wants me to live now. So I'm going to take a deep breath in order to keep myself alive. Take a few deep breaths with that thought. I'm cooperating. Hashem wants me here in his world, and I'm going to consciously cooperate with that Ratzon. I'm going to take a breath and another breath. I'm cooperating with Hashem's Ratzon. And if you want to take it to the next level, add Rabbi Avigdor Miller to that. And so when you take a breath, think to yourself, I'm drinking in a cocktail. Air is a very specific, specialized recipe. There isn't much of it. Not as much as it seems. It's only a little belt around the earth. Go a little further up, it's not there. It's not available. It's a very specific recipe that is designed for us. And so you think to yourself, I'm drinking in a delicious, that's also true, by the way, because we're drinking it all the time. Stop tasting it. But a delicious, healthy, life-giving cocktail that Hashem set up for me. I think I probably mentioned the story of Avigdor Miller. At one time, a grandchild of his came into the house and found him. He had filled the sink all the way up to the top, and he had his head under the water. And someone said, he's standing, what's going on? And he held it there for a certain amount of time, whatever amount of time it was, and he took his head out of the water and took a deep breath. So his grandson asked him, what's that about? So he said, today I was walking through the street and I heard people complaining about New York's polluted air. I felt that these people were going to ruin delicate work that I had done to all the time. So appreciate the air that Hashem gives us to breathe. And all of a sudden, an offhanded comment, the smog, the polluted air, I was going to lose that. So I came home and I stuck my head on the water, whatever amount of time it was. Then I took out my head and I said, the New York air is very good. Okay. Now, so you go about that ishtadlus with this attitude. I'm not seeing to my needs. I'm cooperating with Ratzon Hashem. He's going to see to my needs. And you go about this with full bitachon in Hashem. Bitachon, that I'm doing Ratzon Hashem, and he's going to provide for me. And then you may be surprised at the end of the month that it comes in the form of a check for your work. And He's giving us a certain promise here. The problem is that engaging in jobs and work often takes away this sense that I really, truly Hashem caring for me. It competes with that sense. So he's telling you, if you go about your work with that attitude of, I'm doing this because this is what Hashem wants me to do, because this is Ratzon Hashem, then it will not harm your sense of bitachon, your sense of depending on Him. If you are truly feeling, I'm doing this because this is what Hashem wants me to do, then yes, that will assist you in being able to continue to feel, as you do your work, you're working so hard to bring home that money, and still to feel that it's Hashem who's caring for me. Now, I want to make a few comments on what we just saw, because again, we keep talking Parnassah here, and I said in the next parak, it's going to move into other realms of life. But I do want to add a point, elaborate a little bit. I'm sorry, I see there's some chats here. There's some good questions here. Let's see if we can still get to it. If not, then Blina, I'll come back to these questions at the beginning of next week's shiur. He mentioned a few other things. He talked about setting up cities, and he talked about marrying and raising families. So here also, he said, this is about going about Ratzon Hashem. This is about going about Ratzon Hashem. And that is what you are rewarded for, regardless of how it ends up turning out. And here I want to make a chashuv point, and I want to make it careful. There are, person goes about raising a family. Person goes about marrying. Woman gets married. Man gets married with a lot of dreams, with a lot of visions, a lot of expectations, and also with ideas on how they're going to go about it. So just keep it humorous and simple, right? When I was in Shiduchim and in the stages of getting engaged and getting married, I had my very clear vision of what our Shabbos table would look like, right? With everybody sitting around and listening as I, right? And you know what? Then one person appeared on the scene, another person appeared on the scene, Baruch Hashem, and another person appeared on the scene who had very different plans, right? So, the Chaim Salvavus is telling us here, you are getting married. I should stop before that. You are trying to get married because Hashem wants you to try to get married. Let's say, let's mamish talk from the beginning of that stage. Let's say it didn't end up working out. Let's say it takes a long time. Let's say a person finds themselves at a stage of life, they still haven't found theirs. And they're really at a stage where they're starting to feel like, am I going to find it, am I not? So here the Chaim Salvavus is telling you, Hashem has a plan for you. Hashem has a plan for you. He's telling you to go about, this is important because I've met people who have had a hard time finding their bashurat, and haven't already at an advanced age, or a person who's reached the conclusion that they're not finding it, okay? And it's like, so I'm not living the life that Hashem set up for the yid, right? The profile of a yid is marrying, raising a family. Say, that's not true. That's not true. Hashem wants you to go about it. Hashem has a very specific, personalized, individual plan for every person. Now, I'm talking to people here who, I understand, Baruch Hashem, have gotten to that stage. And that's why, again, these are things that are easier said than experienced. Well, let's bring out the point. And of course, when you're dealing with someone who's actually going through it, you have to be very careful in the way you convey these things. But let's understand, first of all, that no, it's not a failure and it's not a failed life. It's not a life that wasn't actualized. The Ratzon Hashem is that you go through the efforts. That is your sechar. Your perfection, your shlemus, is in living the life that Hashem mapped out for you, doing everything you were supposed to do along that route in accordance with His Ratzon. And so now I'm not getting into, it's painful, and that's not what I'm addressing now. It's painful. Hashem set a certain person up for a certain pain. That's not our discussion right now. Our discussion right now is one specific point, and that is the sense of failure. The sense of, I'm not living the life that a Yid is supposed to be living. That is simply not true. That's important to realize that, no, you're going about that effort. You're going about that effort. That is Ratzon Hashem. Continue trying, because that's further Ratzon Hashem. But whether you actually succeed or not, that is not a matter of your success or failure. It's not a matter of your success or failure. And on the contrary, you're going to be getting the schar, ben shiyug malo yichepze, ben shalayug malo yichepze. Whether you actually accomplish it or not, you're cooperating with Hashem's Ratzon by making the efforts, you're rewarded for that. And I'll bring this in from another angle, a very different angle. But it's the same point if you think about it. There was a maizer of a boy who had drifted very far from Yiddishkeit, from a family from a neighbor. And at one point, he had not been in touch with his family for a while and came home for a Shabbos. He had conditions, they had conditions, whatever it is, he came home for a Shabbos. He's not going to be mechal Shabbos in front of everybody, but they're not going to tell him what to do in terms of going to shul, etc. You know, the works. Okay? He came home for a Shabbos, and then after the Suda, his father got up and started leaving the house. So the boy asked, where are you going? He said, I'm going to a shir. Shir from who? The Baron Leib Steinman. Well, I want to come along. That was a surprise. So he came along to the shir, and it's not one of those stories that something happened and everything turned around. Those are great, but I'm sorry. That's not that kind of story that we're telling right now. We're telling a bit of a more real-life story. I'm sorry if that was like demoralizing. But the Maisa was like this. When they left the shir, the father asked him, what was that about? Why do you want to come to a shir? Right? So the boy said, when you said a Baron Leib Steinman, I was brought back to a scene from Cheder. The whole class came together as a class. The Rebbe took them all to Rabbi Leib Steinman for a test. And Rabbi Steinman, which was true for quite a number of the Gaelim, had this attitude toward tests. The attitude was, the test is not to see what the kid knows. The test is an attempt to show the kid what he knows. They had, the Chazon Ish spoke that way, said that the chokhmah of being able to do a test right is to be able to assess what's a question that the kid can answer? And they ask him that question in order to give him a sense of, I do know. We're not going to get into that whole subject now. But whatever the case is, Rav Aaron Leib, his class came to him, and he had a bowl of candies in front of him on the table. And he handed each, as he asked each kid a question, and the kid gave the answer, the kid got a candy. So Rav Aaron Leib came to this boy, who had already started on his career at that point, and he asked him a question, no answer. Rabbi Aaron Leib was trying to hit each kid in a way that he would manage, right? So Rabbi Aaron Leib said, okay, let me ask you a different question. Lowered the bar a bit, no answer. So Rabbi Aaron Leib moved on. And Lamaisa, at the end of the process, each of the boys had gotten a candy and this boy hadn't. And then they all filed out, you know, to give him Shalom Aleichem on their way out. And as this boy passed by, Rabbi Aaron Leib gave him two candies. And he said, I want to tell you something. I didn't give each boy a candy for answering the question. I gave each boy candy for trying to answer the question. All the boys in your class tried once. You tried twice. So you get two candies. So the boy said, with everything, that stuck in his mind. So when he heard that he's going to Rabbi Aaron Leib, he wanted to come back again. What ended up happening? No. Let's go the route of he ended up,
yeah.
Okay? But I don't know what ended up happening. Okay. Where am I going with that? If you think about it, it really comes back to the same point. Hashem is saying, there are various things that I want happening in Olam Hazeh, and I want you to cooperate with that. I want you to be making your effort toward those things. I decide whether it should actually play out or not. But your greatness is in cooperating with my Ratzon by making those efforts. So we gave that one example. We gave that one example of seeking a shidduch. It's true for the next stage also. The person is married. What's going to come of the marriage? What's going to come of the marriage? How is it going to play out? So here also, it's about doing your part, putting in the efforts to make it the best it could be. What ends up happening? Hashem has a different plan for everybody. But it's like Rabbi Avigdor Miller said, he had his very blunt style. And he was asked, oh, I see that there actually was. This is not nice of me. I'm putting the other chats off for this week, but the chat that actually tells the end of the story, I'm reading out. But please, Nedra, we'll get back to the other ones next week. That apparently the end of the story was that he actually was planning on marrying out and he didn't. Yashar Koyach. That eases our minds. But getting back to our point, I forgot where we were. What was I just saying?
You're saying that it applies to the marriage, marriage.
Oh, so Rabbi Avigdor Miller, in his very blunt style, when somebody asked him, how do I go about finding the right shidduch? He said, you go about making sure that you are the right shidduch. That's number one, right? You make yourself the right shidduch, and that's the first step. But that's really what it is. You make yourself the right shidduch. And after that, the Davin of Siyata D'Shmaya, putting the efforts, and where it goes, Hashem says, I am going to give you the schar for the efforts, and I'm going to decide where it goes. If it ended up playing out beautifully, don't pat yourself on the back. Say, you did yours. Hashem says, you did yours and I did mine. If it doesn't end up playing out beautifully, chas v'shalom, Hashem says, pat yourself on the back. You did yours. And now accept me doing mine. But the idea is the efforts, the cooperating with Hashem's plan. I will briefly address the question asked here in the chat is a very profound question which deserves a more of an arichus. We talked about not looking for, I assume that this is what the question is related to. We talked about not trying to cause nisim. There's a story in the Gemara about a Tana whose daughter accidentally poured vinegar into the Neiris Shabbos instead of the oil, right? And then she said, I guess it was already Shkia and she couldn't change it anymore. And she said, what are we going to do? We're not going to have light for Shabbos. And he said, he who said that oil should burn, he'll say that vinegar should burn. It's a question, and that's what happened. The vinegar burned like oil for long term. So I suppose, I didn't see when the question was asked, but I suppose it's, we said earlier that a person should not be trying to operate with nisim. That story was said about Rabbi Chanina ben Dais. So Chanina ben Dais is a classic example of the exception to the rule that we discussed. In very brief, Chazon Ish alludes to this, others talk about it. In very brief, but this is really something that deserves a long discussion, the idea is like this. When a person reaches the level of really not seeing the difference between Teva and Hashem, because he experiences Teva as a nes, everything that happens there, he just sees Hashem doing. He can get to a level which is a mind-boggling level of that he really won't sense a difference between vinegar and oil. Because when oil is burning, he doesn't see, well, oil burns. He sees, oh, Hashem is making a fire. And that's how he lives. That's how his mentality developed to such an extent that when he sees vinegar burning, he really doesn't experience a difference. This is something that's not only over our heads, but he was a yachid among the Tanoim. There we say when a person reaches that level, he is allowed to proceed on the assumption that he'll have miracles done for him because he's really reached a level where there is no line between Teva and Nes. It's an immensely high level. And therefore, he was also the one when they told him about a certain serpent that was wreaking havoc in the area, killing people. He just walked by the cave and stepped on it, say, put his foot over its hole and killed the snake when it came to bite him. Because, and he's also the one who, even though the Chachamim said, you should avoid messing around with sorcery, meaning not doing sorcery, but don't get into trouble with sorcerers because you could really be harmed. He was the one who just wasn't bothered because it all comes back to the same point. which is elaborated on by Nefesh HaChaim and the Chazon Ish and others, he was living in a place where he really just didn't, he was above sensing Teva. By him, Teva, the fact that he went like this, he said, wow, Hashem is making my fingers move. And to see what we would call an ace happen wouldn't have felt any different to him. At that point, yes, the person does have the right to expect Nisan. That the Chazon Ish alludes to, he's saying, when he talks about that whole arichas, about cooperating with Derech HaTeva, he says, kind of like parenthetically, he says, although there is a madrega where a person can jump above Teva, but we're talking about the rule. I hope that was clear enough. Really, it deserves an hour and a half. Okay. Agut Tavach Raboisam.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Agut Tavach.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.